Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with greed. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. Did you have a great Halloween out there? We're in November now, so it's half off candy at all of the grocery stores. So if you didn't have a good Halloween, you know, it's never too late. You know what? Honestly, you can always do whatever you want. There's a thing that they teach us all the time, that if you follow the rules, it all works out great. But once you become an adult, you kind of get to know that some of that is complete bullshit. Following the rules all the time, is safe, is what it is. But safe is not the same thing as fine. Safe will get you from point A to point B without any bumps or bruises. But bumps and bruises give you stories to tell. They give you something to think about. So I say, go out there, get some bumps and bruises, take some chances. I'm not saying to be reckless. I'm just saying, believe in yourself a little bit more and see where it gets you. That's all I'm saying. I believe in you. Now, today on the show, we have got Alexander Bjorn Vargas. He is a thoughtful, interesting, super talented dude. I've gotten really lucky with musicians, and I always love it when they come in here and they want to play a song or two. And today is no different. Alexander busts out two songs, one of them kind of unfinished, which I sort of love. I like seeing that raw, unvarnished idea as it's still being carved out of the marble, if you will. I mean, you want to talk about taking some chances. He decided, I'm going to play this song. It's never been played before, and I'm going to let everybody hear it. What do you think? And I thought it was incredibly powerful. He's got a great voice. He's got a lot of talent. He's just a genuinely great dude. But you're going to hear about all of that in a minute. I also wanted to do a little bit of cleanup here right up at the top and let everybody know that if you didn't know already, the show is now on Spotify. It's actually just about everywhere where you can find podcasts. And I want to give a special shout out to all of the new listeners to the show. I've definitely been seeing everything growing. And you can reach me if you want to chat, if you want to talk, if you know, just need a pal. I'll be your pen pal. You can write me at info@coffeeoversuicide.com. And the website is still kind of a work in progress, but the email does work. Now, without further ado, here's my conversation with the amazing and talented Alexander Bjorn Vargas.
Oh, God.
It's a good thing we're drinking.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack right there.
Vargas, where does that come from?
Vargas is, it actually means pinnacle of the mountain in Spanish.
I like that.
And I'm not sure exactly where the lineage of that comes from on my family's side. Mm-hmm. Well, my grandfather kind of was estranged from the rest of his family. He came up here to the United States by himself when he was six.
Yeah?
Which, you know, we're talking about all this stuff going on with immigration right now. Like, that takes a lot of balls to just be like,
yeah,
I'm leaving my family and I'm going up to America.
Well, fuck. I mean, so what kind of a... man, I have so many questions about that. I bet you do too. Like, what kind of... So when they tell that story, I mean, what was his whole deal? What was going on at 6 years old that he was like, I gotta get the fuck out?
He never said a lot about it, but it was definitely like abuse going on. Familial abuse.
Yeah.
He was from a little town, more southern Gulf of Mexico. It was a little fishing town. He didn't talk that much about it.
Yeah, I bet.
But and he didn't talk much about his journey. I mean, it took him a while to get up here.
Yeah, I mean the incredible. I mean, not only bravery. I mean, for set that aside for a minute, but the tenacity. I mean, there are full grown adults that don't make it. So that's bananas.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if it'd be possible for a kid to do that nowadays. I mean, things were dangerous back then, but it's a lot more dangerous down there now.
Yeah, certainly. So your family lineage comes from Mexico.
I'm half Mexican and I'm half Norwegian. I'm a Norway Jose.
Well, I mean, I know what your next T-shirt should be.
Yeah. It's been interesting. I'm second generation on both sides of my family, so the immigrant thing is big for me. And I spent all my summers in Norway, most of my summers in Norway growing up. And it's been a really interesting thing being in two completely different cultures.
Yeah.
Like Norwegians, well, first of all, I'm built for drinking both sides. It's a Norwegian joke that we taught the Irish how to drink.
So which side of the family is which?
My mother's side is the Norwegian side.
Okay.
And my father's side is the Mexican side.
You still good with your folks?
That's a lot. I am.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of there, and basically my mother's estranged from everyone except for me.
Really?
And I'm kind of, other than her Norwegian side, the only person that's there in her life.
Huh.
So that's... Kind of a lot.
I take it your folks aren't together then.
No. We're talking like restraining order levels.
Wow.
Of, yeah.
Yeah.
Norwegians are crazy, man. You have no idea.
So that's pretty intense. I mean, is that recent or was that something you grew up in?
No, I was about 18 when it happened.
Yeah.
When all that stuff went down. So it's been a long time. My sisters haven't talked to her since... About then. I mean, I'm 33 now. That's been a long time.
Well, let's go back. So where were you born?
I was born in Boulder.
Boulder.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, that explains the peace and love vibe that I get off of you. Yeah, and you said that you got sisters.
Yeah. I have a middle sister. I'm the eldest. Mm-hmm. I have a middle sister, Elena, who's kind of the one who has her shit together. Mm-hmm. And then I have a little sister, Miranda, which is also a Gemini. This is interesting. I kicked my mom so hard when I was inside of her that I broke her rib. And then Miranda, who's also a Gemini, and we always joke in the family. My dad always says, me and my five children. But like, she broke the same rib.
Oh, my God.
And we're like two sides to a coin. It's almost like we were supposed to be one being, but we decided to have fun with it in this lifetime.
Nice. So you're close with your siblings.
Extremely close.
That's excellent. See, I've got a different experience with my siblings entirely. And I'm not really sure where that comes from. I was thinking about that earlier today. I'm kind of close to my parents, but... You know, I guess I don't talk to anybody else in my family all that much. And so whenever anybody has, you know, family and they're close with them, I'm always fascinated by it. Because my brother was, I mean, he was a real problem for a lot of years. He's older than me. I was the youngest child. And so my brother was a real piece of work. And we didn't get along is putting it nice. It was just constant beatings from him.
Yeah.
But it was like, he had that whole thing where it was like, I'm trying to make you tough, you know, that whole thing. And so, when he split for the army, I was like, good. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, you're not here to kick my ass anymore. So that's great. And then he split, and then now I see him maybe once every fifth Christmas or at a funeral.
Yeah.
It's strange. It's pretty strange. I don't think I've spoken to him in like maybe 7 years or so. But I don't really feel much of anything anymore. Like, I've forgiven him for all that other stuff because, I mean, that was childhood. That was kid stuff. Even the bullying stuff that he was going through. Like, you know, he was a kid trying to figure out the universe the way that kids try to figure out the universe. Once you become an adult, you have a responsibility to try and repair some of those things, you know, like the tendencies that you might have or the anger issues that he had or whatever. He, you know, and I think he did more or less. Weirdly, I think the army was really good for him in a lot of ways. But there's still nothing there. He's just some dude that went in the army that I don't know.
Yeah.
So whenever anybody has siblings that they like, I'm always really fascinated by that because that just hasn't been my experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's been really interesting because I'm also in this in-between world, and for a long time it was a real source of hurt that I still talk to my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually took a few years to heal, especially with Miranda, my littlest sister.
Yeah, I mean, and we can tread as carefully as you'd like to, but, like, what was the... I'm not going to ask what the inciting incident was, but like... I guess, like, what prompted that? Like, that's a really tough thing to ask, isn't it?
Yeah, let's just say that there was substance abuse involved and a lot of screaming.
Yeah.
My mom wasn't strong enough to be physical. She tried to be physical with me a few times, but I'm a big dude. And
yeah.
I kind of just laughed it off, and she didn't appreciate that. I don't know. I've just always had this thing of feeling my heart, and even if it's a tough thing, like, doing what I think is right. And my sisters have come to respect that about me.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a respectable position. I mean, and I definitely appreciate that the subject is sensitive. So let me just say that regardless of whatever it was, the idea that you've decided to figure out where that line is for yourself, and where you're willing to keep your divisions and how much you're willing to hold on to the love that you have for somebody, I think that can be pretty important.
It's taught me a lot about respecting boundaries, and it's taken a long time to figure that out, too.
Yeah.
I mean, especially we're coming up on the holidays. That's always a really rough time, you know?
Yeah.
Really rough. And, like... Yeah, it's forced all of us to grow up and to look at boundaries and look at what's healthy and what's not. And I mean, that's something I still struggle with. I think that's just a human struggle.
Yeah.
I don't trust somebody who doesn't have a little bit of that struggle in their life.
Yeah, because they're probably hiding something.
Yeah. If you got your shit completely together, there's some skeletons there.
Yeah, definitely. So when did you first decide that you were going to pick up the guitar?
Fuck. I think my dad knew this before I did. I think he always knew I was going to be a musician. The first picture of me picking up a guitar is my dad's American Fender Strat. It was a cherry red.
Oh, wow.
He still has that guitar.
Really?
And I think I was like 3 years old and I had like 70s cans on.
Yeah.
From his rig. Like, and I'm just strumming just
nonsense.
Horrible nonsense.
Yeah.
But I've been in love with it for my whole life. I come from a family of musicians. It goes back to my grandpa, really.
Really?
He started family bands. And my Uncle Albert, my dad's brother, was actually one that went professional and toured the world and everything.
Oh, that's amazing.
But when they were kids, my grandpa started, he had his mariachi bands and stuff, but he also started a top 40s band. My dad played saxophone and bass, and my uncle played trumpet, and he went off to college and then toured and stuff. And it was kind of, music has always been a big thing for us.
Did everybody read, or?
Yeah.
Wow. So how did you learn?
Well, I was dyslexic, so I was bad at reading in general, but I had a really good memory. So when I was younger, I started on piano when I was 8.
Oh, yeah, that's the foundation for everything. If you learn piano, you can learn anything.
Being able to read was much more of a struggle for me. Well, I was able to do it, and I got my degree in college, and as soon the second I graduated, I stopped reading music.
Yeah, but you learned all that valuable shit about the theory and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So you said that you were, I mean, were you like diagnosed dyslexic?
Yeah. I had a learning disability, and I grew up in a time where that was trying to be more understood. So I was kind of treated like a lab rat every year. I had IQ tests every year from kindergarten to senior year. I was in some of the special ed classes. I was really good at some things and really bad at other things.
Yeah.
Looking back, I think it was more of a thing about like whether or not I was interested in something.
Yeah, because you definitely have that intellect. I had a little bit of that too. I was not treated like a lab rat. you know, more or less, it was. I mean, I was probably just lazy. You know, and they knew it. But I did have some of that potential for. I remember they wanted to put me in the gifted program, but my math scores were in the toilet.
Yeah.
And everything else was great, but my math was garbage. I just couldn't figure it out. I didn't care, and I didn't see the point. That was kind of the end of anybody giving a shit about how I did in school.
I think that there's more to it in our education system, because when I was in eighth grade, I was doing so bad that I got pulled out, and I went to a private school for a little bit, which was a joke of a school. I just played Dungeons and Dragons for 6 months.
Well, was it a religious school?
No, it was basically just a school for fuck-ups whose parents have a little bit of coin.
I went to a school for fuck-ups that was, you know, public. So, like, it was pretty interesting, because it was like me... who just didn't want to learn math, and gangsters. So the teachers were like, what are you doing here? I don't know. I mean, I guess I have a problem with authority. They're like, you've been pretty cool to us. I'm like, yeah, you're pretty cool people. But
you're not making me learn Pythagorean theorem.
Yeah. I mean, I had a problem with assholes. It's not so much that I had a problem with... I guess I did have a problem with authority, but like... I had a problem with authority for authority's sake. You know what I mean? Like those people who really wanted to enforce the rules just because they were, I don't know, missing something elsewhere in their life.
Well, and punk and metal, man. I mean,
yeah, totally.
I understand.
Yeah, I mean,
rock and roll was kind of my rebellion from the music that everyone in my previous generation played. But I still love it, though.
But you were so what kind of music were you raised on? Like, because it sounds like there was a lot of stuff around all the time.
Oh man, I think everyone in my generation before all the controversy was really into Michael Jackson.
Yeah,
the very first thing that I was really into is when I was a little kid, I would put on concerts for my grandma and my tias and everything, and it was Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody was my very first concert.
Nice.
And I was playing one of the best axes ever. I believe it was just a shitty dollar store broom. I mean, they sound great, dude.
Yeah. Of course they do. They're perfect.
Yeah.
I used to, my first drum kit was the banana seat on my bicycle. Because I had this used 70s bicycle. Like everybody in my family, we had such shit.
Kind of stuff that if you kept it nice, it would probably be worth a shit ton now.
It probably would now. Like, hipsters would totally like some guy with a twirly mustache and really tight pants and cream himself over the stuff I used to have. My dad had a jukebox, because he used to be a jukebox repairman. And he actually had a jukebox. So I grew up with a jukebox in our house and records. We always had records.
Oh, yeah.
And so I got exposed to a lot of music. But, you know, the strange thing was, I mean, all the music was pretty much, it was a big wide variety. But the gateway for me into other things. I always got excited because the 45 records had B-sides, and the B-side was the song that wasn't going to sell. Yeah. And the B-side always interested me a lot. I was really big into comparing and contrasting whatever the hit was versus whatever
they actually wanted to write.
Yeah, exactly. And so I became obsessed with it, and it was the greatest thing. And then when I finally stopped listening to, you know, the Beach Boys and Poison, it was because I went to a skateboard ramp, and the guys that owned the ramp, they were like rich preppy kids, but they had a big old jam box, and you could bring your own music when it was your turn to session.
Oh, nice.
And so it...
You got your own sesh tunes, huh?
Yeah, so it was all kinds of people. You know, I was bringing whatever the fuck was going on at the time. You know, I had no idea. I think I had a Guns N' Roses tape.
You brought some Barbra Streisand.
Probably the heaviest thing I had. And then there was, you know, the scary kid that kept a knife in his Converse was listening to Slayer. And I God, never I can, heard I can anything
smell,
like
I can
that.
Smell him now.
Yeah.
With the camo cargo pants. And...
Yes, 100%. Yeah, kind of a wispy mustache. Yeah. Looked a little dangerous. I bet his father beat him, you know, which is less funny, but kind of funny at the same time now.
Well, it was constructive feedback.
Like the only way his father knew how to show him love.
He just smelled like B.O. and his dad's Old Spice and sour.
I could go in the military, but I got flat feet.
Sour milk a little bit. Yeah. Got shin splints.
Yeah. So that guy got to play Slayer, and then I started hearing punk rock, and it was like, I mean, it was all the shit that I was raised on, but faster.
Yeah, that's what I want to know. Is like, was there a moment that clicked for you where... It was just like, yeah. I mean, maybe there's a few, but like an oh fuck rock and roll moment, or
yeah.
an oh fuck oh. I'm gonna be a drummer moment, like an album or a song.
Yeah, but unfortunately it's not super interesting because the moment that I knew I really wanted to play my drums, because I grew up in a house where there were instruments in the house. My dad kind of fumbled with a guitar, and he bought a keyboard when they were kind of new. So it was like, you know, he spent a crazy amount of money on this keyboard that now, like,
had
you know,
like a square, had like a square, one square wave and one sawtooth wave.
Yeah. Oh, and, you know, like ghost noises and shit. Like it had 100 sounds. Like they give them away in gift bags and people throw them away now. But it was probably $500 at, you know, back in the day. And so he bought this keyboard and messed with it. But he was a drummer. And so I grew up in a house where there were drums, and
that's a gift.
Yeah, he gave me his old drum kit, and I played with the sticks. And then if my friends came over, I'd go, "Look at these drums I got," and I'd just kind of bang on them, sort of ineffectually, and you know, that was that. And then it was like right around like, you know, 1991, 92, where. You know, the alternative thing started to take off. Music was really changing in a way that was accessible. Like, mainstream music was changing into weird shit. Because the record companies were like, well, that sold. And, you know, I don't know why Nirvana is selling. So let's just throw money at everyone and see if we can get one.
Man,
and so
I wish that was the case nowadays.
I know,
man.
So do I. So I got this record from this band, this English band called Ned's Atomic Dustbin.
And they, nice.
Yeah, they had two bass players. One played like chords, and the other one played low rhythm shit. And then the guitarist just had a wah pedal and went insane. But their drummer was playing something that I couldn't figure out. I'd grown up on Top 40 radio, and so sitting with the drumsticks was always good enough for me because it was like, oh yeah, you know, I can play AC/DC, I can play Poison, I can play Bon Jovi, no big deal.
My heart does this beat naturally.
Yeah, exactly. It's so simple. You know, anybody could do this if you have a heartbeat. And then I heard this drum beat that just sounded weird. and it was for a song called Kill Your Television, which was a nonsense song, but it was fun. And it was fast, and there was a lot of cymbal work going on, and the bass drum didn't hit where I was expecting it to hit. And so I actually sat down at my drums.
So you wanted to unpack it.
Yeah.
It kind of became a, I need to reverse engineer this type
right,
thing.
Right, exactly. And yeah. then Faith No More, and then, like, I mean, the metal stuff, I always heard, like I listened, my brother was a Metallica guy, so naturally I went Megadeth. And,
yeah, man. I'm in the Megadeth camp. I mean, they're both goofy fucks, but like.
Yeah, yeah. And then, but of course, my main jam on the metal side was Anthrax. Like, that nice. Was my shit. Because Anthrax was sort of punky. Like, they were thrash, you know? So that was kind of my jam. They were kind of fun, sort of, I don't know, like if the Ramones were heavier.
Yeah, and, totally. I can see that.
Yeah. So if Motorhead was... you know, a little happier.
Little less meth.
Yeah, exactly.
Just tone down the Jack Daniels and the meth just a little bit.
Just a little bit, and you get Anthrax. And I had fun with that stuff. I just loved it. But the trouble with metal was that it was like all the stadium stuff to the people before punk rock happened. You'd hear that and you'd go, well, at least I would hear that. And a lot of people would hear that and go, yeah, that's too hard. Like, this sounds like people who have spent their whole life learning to play music. And
this sounds like a teenager who's furiously pounding off because he can't get laid. And he just started pounding off on the guitar instead.
Exactly. Yeah. All of this sounds really, it sounds like math, honestly. And you know,
I don't want to do homework.
I don't do well with math.
Yeah, hey, we just circled back around.
Circled all the way back around. But then you hear the Ramones and you go, oh, fuck, I could do that.
I don't even have to think.
Yeah, exactly. All I got to do is 1, 2, 3, 4. And so to me, that was it. Like, oh yeah, there's other stuff. And then so at the skate ramp, I was hearing punk. I was hearing metal that was not radio. And so it was like, I had no idea that there was shit out there like Helloween or King Diamond or any of that stuff. And it was like, even though a lot of it, like, I didn't even necessarily like all of it, but it was like, but I had an appreciation for it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like when, what was the thing that really lit your fuse?
I think I can name a few different moments in those progressions. The first one, definitely Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
And I mean,
talk about virtuosos.
It's cliche, I know, but like back then it wasn't as, it was just like, and it was even before Wayne's World. I liked it before Wayne's World.
Right. Yeah.
And then, Superstition by Stevie Wonder. When I was probably about 13 years old, I worked for my dad's landscaping company all summer so that I could buy a synthesizer.
Oh, wow.
And I bought it from this jazz musician. I don't remember the name of it, but it was one of those where you had to load in the sound, an OS system.
Yes!
And it was the one Trent Reznor made Pretty Hate Machine on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you had to load in the OS, and then you had to load in the sounds. And it was a pain in the ass, but I loved that thing. So I get it. I work all summer long. I get this fucking thing. And it's gunked up from the smoke from the bars from the jazz musician who had it. So I had to get it repaired.
Yeah.
And I had to get a loan from my dad to do that. So it was just like all this work, and I had to wait two more months before it worked. And then I learned Superstition. And I just liked that kind of harpsichord thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's part two. And then the next one was Gave Up by Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah.
And I was into Grateful, or not Grateful Dead. No. Yeah. Let's back that up and reverse it.
Yeah, yeah.
I was into Guns N' Roses a little bit. I was into some of that stuff. White Zombie. And then Nine Inch Nails, that song hit me the very first time I heard it. There was just something about this one little synth line.
Yeah.
That was like, I need to unpack this. And that's when I started getting more serious about that. And then the next time was my mom came back from Norway when I was, I think, like 15. And brought me, she's like, my cousin Helena is a professional painter there in Norway. Really crazy. Just, you would love her. She's amazing. So she sent all these albums back to me. some of them kind of sucked, but there was this band, Dimmu Borgir, who's Norwegian black metal.
Yeah.
And, like, the first time I heard that, I was just, like, at that point, I was into more American stuff, like White Zombie and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was hard, and I thought that was hardcore. And then all of a sudden, we're getting into blast beats and just demon screeches and like, just machine gun guitars. And I was just like...
It just challenges.
I remember just being like, whoa, I didn't even know this was possible.
Yeah.
And then I got really deep into, like Dying Fetus and Cannibal Corpse and Deicide and all that, like, Hate Eternal, all sorts of shit like that. But, like, and then, so I really started playing in bands... the first few bands I played in for a while were all like a mixture of death metal and black metal. And, because I was already playing keyboards, I could write for that kind of stuff. And I found a classical keyboardist named Stu.
Uh huh.
And so I was singing in Norwegian and we had the keyboard and stuff. So we were more black metal than anyone else in Denver. That's for sure. It was like this kid who looks Mexican speaking Norwegian, making classical arrangements to blast beats and, so, yeah. Like, that's kind of, like, that's when I, like, made my proper entrance into being in bands, and I've been in bands ever since I was, like, 14.
That's amazing.
Yeah. my uncle was a notary, and yeah? you had to get, if you were that young, you had to get this special permit for each bar to work at the bar that had to be notarized. And that's the way they kept kids from playing.
Oh,
but my
yeah.
uncle was a notary, so he would just stamp every fucking one for me. So I was playing in bars, like, I remember the 15th Street Tavern, it's not there anymore. Like, man, I partied at that place a lot of times. and I found the loopholes.
Yeah, I remember that I was playing in bars pretty young myself. But the thing about playing in bars a lot of times is that... when you're young, it's a really good excuse for the place to fuck you over.
Oh, yeah. Hey, kid, we'll give you one beer and then don't say anything and that's going to be your payment.
Right.
Or like a slice of pizza.
Or they'll tell you that they're going to pay you and then you'll play and they'll say, get the fuck out of here.
What yeah, are you, what are you going
to
do?
Talking?
That's
yeah,
happened.
Exactly.
That's happened to me more times I'd like to admit.
Yeah. Ugh. So, so with everything that has happened with all of that stuff. I mean, I can imagine that a lot of that presented a difficulty for you. And so the music gave you somewhere to put those things. But, I mean, so... It
absolutely saved my life a lot of times.
So where were you at when you realized that your life needed saving?
Probably when I broke my mom's rib in the wound.
When you get out of here, you're getting an ass whooping.
Well, as you know, I'm Buddhist.
Yeah.
And like for me, I think that this problem has probably, I probably don't remember the lifetime when I had that realization that there's something going on here that needs healing.
Yeah, but how did you land on Buddhism? Like, especially you're the Mexican Norwegian black metal guy
who's Buddhist.
Yeah. How do you land
and drinking vodka on a podcast?
Yeah. How do you land on Buddhism?
I think it was an issue of location. I mean, there's also the greater thing that I don't want to go too deep into it, that I think it was a karmic thing. Felt very natural to me. There's tons to it, and there's a lot of stuff going on right now.
Yeah.
With it. But my aunt was Buddhist, and I think for her it was a form of rebellion. On my Mexican side.
Yeah, sure. I imagine there's a lot of Catholicism.
Yeah. Well, it's a weird mixture of Catholicism and shamanism and the brujeria stuff in
yeah.
my family. I think it was just like it was just cosmically what was meant to happen. There's a lot of Tibetan refugees and lamas in Boulder. And I was born in Boulder, and I ended up being around that a lot and learning
yeah.
from different people. And it just made more sense to me than other things. I was always obsessed with history and religions.
Me too.
I've always said if I didn't want to be a musician so goddamn bad, I'd probably be a history teacher.
Well, you know, you could do both.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, use your music.
Dr. Jones did it, right? He'd go out in the world and then he'd...
whip over. It's my bad Harrison Ford impersonation.
I think it was beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
I don't know. I think that the in a way it's more secular. In a way, it being more about being compassionate and helping others than worshiping anything. And
yeah,
and also the thing about being in the now rather than focusing on some sort of promised land after you die that might not even exist.
Yeah.
Was very appealing to me.
Yeah.
Of like, it just made sense to me of like, I don't want to focus on something that might not even exist when there's all this abundance and beautiful things available right here.
Yeah.
And by beautiful, I mean that in a very Buddhist term of even the suffering can be like a good thing, you know?
Yeah. And that's a real mind fuck to wrap your head around. I just had another person in here, Haley Driscoll, and she and I had a conversation about her road to Buddhism, and the little bit that I know from the little bit that I've studied in Buddhism.
Yeah,
and I've always found Buddhism very fascinating, and the thing that I've always liked about it is that it doesn't purport to have the answers. And I think that's a lot of balls for a religion. The thing that always struck me about it is that it seems like a collection of ideas, and it's designed to make you think versus designing around stopping you from thinking.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to go to Ghostbusters right now. Because this is a big part of my life.
Yeah.
Ghostbusters was a huge thing for me. It was with every kid around my age.
But hell yeah.
But I was always very, like, spiritual little kid. I was very into that stuff. And what Ghostbusters showed me was that science and spiritualism can be the same thing. They can be married together.
Yeah.
And maybe there's things about that are unexplainable that people just put into one category, that it's just that we don't have a full understanding of it yet.
Sure.
Now, the reason I'm going from Buddhism to Ghostbusters is to go back to it, that one thing, the way I've come to understand it is that Buddhism is kind of like a collection of spiritual scientists who've been pooling their knowledge through practice and through experiences into this thing called the Dharma, and it's kind of like this collection of data.
Yeah.
But it's still all about, like, you're also a scientist. You have to have, like, the scientific mind about your experience and meditate and dissect it and see what's really going on here and trust your own data. And that's one of the things that's really appealing to me about it.
Yeah.
It's like a collection of spiritual scientific journals going back 2,500 years.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, there's also dogma and there's different forms of Buddhism, and it has problems like any other one.
Right.
But
of course. But it has a lot less problems than a lot of the others, that's for sure. So, I mean, going back to part of that piece of your journey, you talk about various bits and pieces where the Buddhism was essential in saving your life, and the music was essential in saving your life. But what did you need to be saved from? Were you a particularly troubled kid?
Well, yeah, definitely. Definitely a dark kid. I was, I think a lot of it comes from abuse growing up, not physical as much as, emotional abuse.
Yeah.
Verbal abuse, a lot of disassociation from my mother. Sorry, Mom, if you ever hear this, but I'm an open book and you know that. Yeah, there was a lot there that still hasn't fully healed.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a lifelong journey. For a while I worked for a Buddhist organization, which shall not be named, but, there was a few years where I got to do about 4 months of meditation retreat a year. And, without all those times and without all that really intense, like, you know, month-long silent retreats, I don't think I would have been able to have a relationship with my mom and help her heal. And that's an important thing in my life. Without getting into detail, yeah, there was a lot of abuse. And also, I think having a learning disability, but also being such a creative kid and maybe also like falling in love with my sadness a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that I've always found, maybe that ties into the Buddhist thing of life is suffering and being in love with those experiences because they make you feel alive.
Yeah. No, totally. I had that exact same thing. I mean, I was depressive from a very young age myself. And so, you know, especially when you're young and you're not quite sure how to manage those things, figuring out how to use your emotions correctly is really difficult because there's not really a one-size-fits-all approach. You've really got to take all of the approaches that other people give you and try them for yourself and then modify them for yourself. And so for you to see something out there like, you know, music that's dark or sad or films that are dark or sad and to have those things speak to you and start clinging to those things because finally something is touching a part of yourself that you felt like was alien and alone, the part of yourself that is the part that you wish would go away, the part that you wish you could expel or have exorcised, you know, by a priest, and then you hear something like a piece of music that speaks to that sadness, that event that happened to you, that thing. And suddenly, you're not alone. The world is bigger. And so while it simultaneously touches the thing that makes you feel bad, you feel better. And it's difficult to explain that to anybody. Yeah.
Yeah, like some of the times I felt most alive was when I was most suicidal in a weird way.
Yeah.
And it's in a very strange way, like feel so much more acutely aware of my body and it's really interesting.
Yeah. I've always thought so. I think that more people have, you know, not necessarily, I think that there's a difference between, you know, suicidal thoughts and a compulsive suicidal ideation. They're completely separate things, but they're in the same kind of Venn diagram of stuff, and there is something about it that, man, it's a difficult thing to explain to people because there is a sense of being alive. It's almost like it's almost like your personal Evel Knievel moment, you know, like I'm gonna live through me. I'm gonna see how far to the edge of the Grand Canyon I can take this fucker, and see where it goes, and then. You know, I mean, you get older and hopefully you learn better, but I understand why people get there in the first place, because there is almost something more life-affirming about getting to the brink and coming back than never seeing the edge.
Yeah. definitely. I have a little song that's almost like a half song right now. That's right on the nose with this. If you want to hear it,
you want to play it.
Yeah, it's pretty short.
Let's play a song.
If you're down with that,
yeah.
So this song is actually inspired by a mixture of a few of my lovers and my mom, and it's. Well, maybe I'll just shut up and play it.
Well, that's not Freudian.
Yeah. I don't know. Sigmund Freud?
The Freud dude.
So that's the song. I mean, it's really inspired by, you know.
Yeah, wow.
No lyrics yet.
You could work on it some.
Well, I mean, I'm always down for some feedback, but you know, I am the artist.
What's this called so far?
It has a working title. Right now I'm calling it Rondi, which is my mom's name. Again, not Freudian at all. Says I feel like shit today. This life is overwhelming. She says I can't, no, I'm not okay. Sometimes I feel like ending. Says she's not okay. So tired of pretending. Whoa, such a basket case. Her fairy tale is ending. She lost the will to carry on. Upon this place so long that she can move on. She says I feel like shit today. So tired of pretending. She says I feel like shit today. So tired of pretending.
Wow. Do you want to do one more?
You know what? I'm going to do the opposite energy. And this came from a time when I was deeply in love with a polyamorous girl. And it was very painful for me. And I pretended I was polyamorous too, but it really wasn't the case.
Yeah, so because that's one of those situations that it's like, you know, it doesn't work for other people, but it might work for us.
This is going to work. Yeah, I'm polyamorous too. Go bang all these dudes. I'll pretend like I'm having sex too. But despite all of that, for some reason during that relationship she just electrocuted me with creativity,
which is great.
Yeah,
so maybe that's what she
maybe
was
that's
there
all
for.
It was for.
Yeah,
we're still friends.
It's perfect.
Let's I haven't played this song in a long time. Let's see if I remember the lyrics.
Excellent.
Off to a great start. Well, I don't need to tell you that I'm lucky. I know
am. No, I am. And I need to tell you my heart's ugly. I know it bleeds, and the scars to see. So give me pardon, my man, all tyrant since mankind began. Alone in this blue bubble trapped in space. I am all the tallest trees. I'm anger, greed, and jealousy. I am tears rolled down across your face. Across your face. I don't know what this life is for. I can't share my experience with you. I must let go the things that hold me back from truly connecting with you. Connect with you. Connect with you. Whoa. Whoa. Moment's holy. Just look outside, the stars in the sky. And I don't need to say that you are lovely. I know you are, and so am I. So give me time and give me space. I know I'm such a basket case. Nothing left to lose, so now I'm free. I give you all you gave to me. Compassion, love, and sympathy. I'm tired of being everything but me. Now you see that I don't know what this life is for. If I can't share my experience with you, I must let go the things that hold me back from truly connecting with you. Well, I don't know what this life is for. If I can't share my experience with you, and I must let go the things that hold me back from truly connecting with you. Connect with you. Connect with you.
That's amazing, Alex.
I haven't practiced that one in a long time.
Well, it sounds like you've really found a way to get in touch with everything and to make a lot of peace with a lot of the struggles that have come up in your life.
Yeah.
It's a constant struggle, I'm sure.
It's like peeling an onion, though.
Yeah.
You know?
Because as soon as you get past one thing, I mean, you're never really done.
Thank the gods. How boring would that be?
Exactly. Well, I'm glad to hear that you still got a great relationship with your mom, and that you still got a great relationship with your family, and that you've got a good relationship with yourself.
For the most part.
Yeah. What more could you ask for? You can't have everything. Where would you put it?
Yeah, my apartment's too small for everything.
But thanks for talking to me, Alex.
Yeah, it was such a pleasure, man.
Thanks. Another episode where you can hear rain. How crazy is that? I guess it's not that crazy. I run this out of a garage. What are you going to do? I guess what I'm going to do is figure out some sort of a soundproofing system. But that's the show for this week, everybody. Please make sure you go check out Alexander and the Big Sleep. You can find them on Spotify. You can find them on CD Baby and Facebook and YouTube and everywhere music is found. And that's all I got for right now, everybody. There is some pretty great stuff coming up next week. And the website is coming, I assure you. We'll get some message boards. We'll get together. We'll get to know each other. And as always, don't kill yourself out there.